A couple of years ago, I read a fascinating book called Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. It was written by Caitlin Doty, who had graduated from college, had a degree in medieval history, looked around and said, what am I going to do with that? And said, oh, look, here's an ad for a job in a crematorium. And so she took that job and learned what that side of death was like, which led to all sorts of odd encounters and bodies of every shape and size. And she kind of liked it. And that led her to become a licensed mortician. Started a column called Ask a Mortician, which became pretty popular. And now she's back with a new book called From Here to Eternity, in which she travels the world to see how other countries and cultures handle the end of life. Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. That was such a great intro. Oh. I need to just hire you to introduce me everywhere I go from now on. That was so succinct and perfect.
Well,
thank you.
I really enjoyed Smoke Gets in Your Eyes because it was so offbeat and a topic I knew nothing about. As soon as I finished reading it, I handed it to my wife and said, you have to read this. And so now I'm glad to finally have a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, this is great.
It's a little bit odd because it's a day when we're talking about, you know, so many deaths in Las Vegas last night and the possible death soon of rock star Tom Petty. But you're around death all of the time. Does that ever get to you?
You know, it's days like this that get to me. Normal death or normalized death of old age or of disease, it's not like you ever truly get used to it, but you understand that it's the cycle of life and you understand that you're there to help people and that you can be a professional. But on days like this, where it just seems like all of this senseless death is blooming all around you, it's hard to even know what to say. Even as the, you know, quote unquote death expert, it's hard to be comforting because I too am angry and freaked out. And, you know, you just have to do your best to be comfortable with your own mortality and look at death in the eye. Because I do think, what I will say, though, is that I think it makes it a little easier to face days like this when you've done some of the deeper existential work about death and around death. You're not wondering, is this ever going to happen to me? Yes, it's going to happen to you. Hopefully not like this, in this violent way, but it is going to happen to you, and you need to have those thoughts and have those conversations.
You say in both of your books that funerals in the United States have become way too impersonal. What does that mean?
Well, you know, it's a for-profit industry. It's one of the only, or probably the only thing that we're required to do, which is die, that we're required to go to a for-profit industry to help us with. And because they have a business model, they want things to be run a certain way. They want you to choose embalming, chemically preserving the dead body. They want you to choose the casket. They want you to choose the vault. They want you to choose the suit and the flowers and the hearse. And they have certain ideas about what that is. And there's not a lot of room for a family member to step in and really be involved and really personalize the service to help them with their grief and help them with, you know, do what the person really might have wanted.
What if what the person really wanted was to just be thrown into the ground without being embalmed and without a casket? Is that legal in the United States?
It is legal, and the reason that you might go to a cemetery and they tell you that wasn't possible is because it's the cemetery rules themselves. They like to have the big concrete vault around the casket underground because it makes it easier to mow the grass. It makes it easier to landscape. It makes it, you know, the ground doesn't sink and move. But there are places called natural cemeteries, natural burial cemeteries, and that's where I want to be buried, where you just dig a hole about 3 feet deep and put your shrouded body directly into the ground. And it's very simple. It's what Americans did for hundreds of years before the burial and funeral industry came about 150 years ago.
Why do you want to be buried that way instead of cremated? After all your time,
you know,
in a crematorium.
Yeah. After all the cremating I've done, you'd think. I think it's because I've done so much cremating. And it's not a horrific process by any means. And I know a lot of people are really comforted by the idea of cremation. But for me, there's something really powerful in just being allowed to decompose naturally back into the ground from whence I came.
To become worm meat.
Sort of, Yeah, they become more food. That, you know, I know it's hard for some people to believe, but that is a really comforting thought for me. Mm-hmm. To just, you know, to be embraced by the earth. That sounds lovely, and that sounds better for me than the idea of fire.
Would I be allowed to do that in my own backyard, or would it have to be an official cemetery?
You know, it depends on the state that you live in. So California, where I work, absolutely could not do that. Michael Jackson actually wanted to be buried at Neverland Ranch, and even with his fancy team of lawyers, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was governor, tried to get it to happen, but the county was like, nope, absolutely not. Whereas someplace like Texas, it's absolutely possible. I'm not sure about your state, but look into it. It's worth looking into.
Okay.
Harder, though, if you're just like your suburban house. It's a lot easier if you have a larger piece of land somewhere.
Yeah, you put a fence around it, you call that your cemetery. There are family cemeteries in this country where people get buried on their own property.
Absolutely, yeah, and it helps if it's more rural. But you know, yeah, absolutely, look into the laws of your county and your state, because that's a way to potentially save a lot of money. And if you've had the land in your family for a while, what a lovely idea!
All right, now I have to ask you about the funeral pyre, a phrase I learned from Jim Morrison. In the late 60s, when he had the hit with the Doors called Light My Fire. It was the first time I'd heard about a funeral pyre. And then
it rhymes with pyre. Fire and pyre rhyme really well.
Yeah. So
for a rock song.
A couple of years ago, there was this wonderful, underrated movie called Captain Fantastic with Viggo Mortensen, and his wife dies, and the traditional members of the family bury her. But he and his kids then go dig up Mom and set her up on a funeral pyre in a park somewhere, you know, on wood and everything else. They have their own ceremony. They light that thing on fire, and that's how they wanted to do, if you will, their own cremation of this woman that they all loved. Is that legal?
I've never seen that movie. That sounds great. I'll check it out. So it's not, for the most part, it's not legal. But in the new book, I talk about this amazing little town called Crestone, Colorado, where they have made basically the only open-air community pyre in the Western world a reality through years and years of fighting with the county and fighting with the residents. And they now have this communal pyre that when you go, it's just beautiful. They do it right at dawn, and it's under this big dome of Colorado sky, and they set the body alight. And you don't see the really graphic parts. There is wood over the body, but it's just, you know, the smoke twirls up into the atmosphere. And if you had any spiritual side to you, you would go, that's really the soul, you know, snaking up into the sky, into the morning, the dawn sky. And it's a really powerful experience, and I wish that it was legal in more places.
The book is called From Here to Eternity. Caitlin Doty is my guest here on the Big 550 KTRS. In the book, you go on this journey, because the subtitle is Traveling the World to Find the Good Death. Did you find it?
I think so. I'd like to think so. And people have asked, did it change your mind? You know, did you find things that you never expected to find? And not really. I think I found what I expected to find, which is that most of the rest of the world has so much more of a connection with the dead body. They're so much more involved in funerals when they design spaces, whether where they keep the cremated remains or whether they prepare the body or what the cemeteries are. They design it to make sure that the family feels held and comforted and like they're in a good place. And the American funeral industry is just really bad at that. And we have a lot of work to do to improve the current system.
You also write that some cultures look at how other cultures handle death and the dead and consider it barbaric. For instance.
Right. Well, we tend to do that. So one place I visited is this rural area of Indonesia, where they keep the mummified dead in the home, sometimes for several years, and care for the mummified dead.
Now, let me just stop you right there. What does that mean, mummified? I've heard that phrase my whole life. I don't actually know what it means. Is it the same as being embalmed?
Well, it sort of is in Indonesia. So the ancient way that they did it, or the, you know, the older way that they prepared the body or mummified it, is through natural means like teas and tannins and putting leaves on the body and tanning it essentially like you would a, you know, leather, basically. And that just keeps the skin intact, and it wrinkles and it desiccates and it looks kind of like a mummy, but it's still the same person. Basically, you can still tell it was mom or dad.
Mm-hmm.
But now, because they're busy and it's, you know, modernity has come to this rural area, they're more likely just to use formalin or formaldehyde and stick it in the body the way that an American funeral home would embalm a body.
Okay.
But what's interesting about that to me is we do that same preparation for our dead bodies here in America, but we're not keeping them around. We're just burying them in this fortress underground. So why are we doing this elaborate preservation on our bodies if we're not going to keep them around,
right,
and not going to take them out and not going to, you know, it doesn't matter. So why are we being so aggressive with how we preserve our bodies?
When you were in Indonesia and you were learning about this, did you go to somebody's home and there's dead grandpa sitting there?
Well, actually, funny story, not that funny, but yeah, I think funny, is that we were staying in this small village and we were fortunate enough to have connections to be able to spend the, you know, the week in the village. And we were staying in these, they have these tall, beautiful houses kind of on stilts. And we were staying in one and there were maybe four others on the property directly next to one another. And as we were leaving after the week of seeing this festival where they take out the mummies, they invited us up into a room in the house next door, which was really only about 10 feet away. And there had been someone in there the whole time that we had been there.
Mm.
So sleeping only about 10 feet away from us, there was this woman who had died maybe 2 weeks prior. So she was still pretty fresh by mummification standards, but we hadn't known it, but she had been sleeping there the whole time.
But you didn't look over and go, okay, I'm in the room with a dead person and I'm not at work.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little strange to see, I call it, you know, all throughout the book, it's basically bodies in the wild somehow,
yeah,
because
yeah,
in the American funeral industry, you know, you go to the house and you pick up the body and you immediately cover it up and put it on the stretcher and whisk it away to this kind of medicalized environment. And that's the only place the body gets to go. But here I see it, you know, at a body farm where it's being composted, or, you know, these mummies or these bodies, you know, skulls in people's homes in Bolivia. And it's just, it's bodies in the wild. It's bodies where we in America don't think they should be.
Didn't you go to someplace in Asia where the family members were picking the bones out of the ashes with chopsticks?
Yeah, that's Japan. So that's it. You know, Japan is also a highly developed, modernized, technologically advanced country, but they have a ritual called the Kotsuage, where after, you know, when we take a body out of a cremation machine in America, we have to use this machine called the cremulator to grind the bones down to be ashes, what we know as ashes. But in Japan, they just pull out the full skeleton, and the family with a pair of chopsticks will go up from the feet up to the head, taking up the chunks of bone and placing them in the urn.
And then what do they do with that? Just hold it with the ashes, and that's the where their loved one remains?
Yeah, so the bones go in the urn, and then they will, you know, bury the urn or put it in their, you know, their columbarium or wherever their family is kept. That's what will happen with the bones.
Would you explain to my audience what Dr. Cheryl Johnston is doing with her forest program in North Carolina?
Yeah, so Dr. Johnston is runs what we know of as a body farm, or you may have heard of as a body farm, but it's really more accurately called a human decomposition facility. And it's primarily there for two reasons. One, to study, you know, decay rates, to study donated bodies, to see how they decay in different conditions, et cetera, and also to train students on forensics. So they set up little boundaries and crime scenes around these donated bodies, and the students can collect the bones. And at that point, they can also have this amazing bone collection at the university with a diversity of sex and race and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
for good comparison for science.
So then do they have forensic specialists coming through and testing themselves?
Yeah, they do, and they have what was really amazing to me is they have a cadaver dog program where people who either law enforcement agencies or volunteer trainers who have these cadaver dogs that are trained to sniff out dead bodies that may get lost in the mountains or have somehow gone missing. They train the dogs there with the actual bodies, and they also send them home with some of the dirt from underneath the bodies, because that's, she calls it dirty dirt, which means especially, with human scent in the dirt, and that can continue to train the dogs to be able to pick up on the very specific scents of a dead human body.
So can anybody donate themselves to be used for that purpose?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they want you to be within a certain radius. This is in North Carolina, but I believe there are about six or seven of these facilities around the United States. So if you're interested, look in your area and see if there's one that wants to take you.
It's another option for you. Okay.
Another option.
Caitlin, I have been to funerals with open caskets, too many of them in the last few years, unfortunately, where some people stayed away because a dead body freaks them out, honestly. And yet, these bodies exhibitions are popular. We had to come through St. Louis twice. I know that there are cities that have them on permanent display. You know the ones I'm talking about where the dead bodies are essentially plasticized. What do you think of that practice?
I think, well, what's so interesting to me is that bodies exhibition, I believe, is the largest travel or most popular traveling tourist show in the world.
Wow.
So, which just kind of shows how anybody who tells you they're not really interested in death or bodies, it's like, oh, no, no. Yes, you are. Most certainly are.
Yeah.
Everyone really is when it comes down to it. The traveling shows, sometimes I like it as a concept, and I like it as a demonstration of what the dead body can do and what it looks like underneath and the science of it. There's been some controversy in the past with how the bodies were obtained for those traveling exhibitions.
Yeah.
Often, I hear people say, "Oh, they all look Asian." And it's like, well, yes, they're. You know, often they were Chinese political prisoners,
right?
The original bodies. So there wasn't a lot of consent there,
mm-hmm.
which makes me a little, if you're going to be in a body farm, you willingly donated your body to science.
Right.
And you're happy to be there helping forensics or whatnot. Whereas this, but I think they're getting better about it now because people are so interested in it, they want to donate their bodies.
Yeah.
They're like, yes, please, put me on display.
I just think it's so odd that people will shy away from a dead body of a person they knew in a funeral parlor, but go see anonymous dead bodies set up as if they were playing tennis at the St. Louis Science Center.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
Well, I will say that what I get a lot is, and the reason that I keep pushing ahead with the work I'm doing, which is primarily getting people to be closer to the dead body and be willing to be with an unembalmed dead body, is because I keep hearing people say, I went to a wake and my friend was up there and it just didn't look like her. She had makeup on. She looks kind of like a wax figure. Her hair was done strange. It just doesn't seem like the person to them. And I keep hearing that, and it makes me think that there's something about the way that the American funeral industry is running their wakes that really turns people off to the practice, and that if people were allowed to just be with the actual dead body, yes, it'll look dead, but that's kind of the point. It's supposed to look like a sleeping dead version of the person you loved. It's, with the makeup and the whole kit and caboodle, I think that's what's making people shy away from it. And I'd like to see it be more of an option for families to choose not to do that whole thing.
You made Aunt Jenny look alive. Why would you do that
right.
when she's dead?
Yeah, yes, yeah. No, Aunt Jenny's dead, though.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to come to terms with, is that she's dead. We're not trying to convince ourselves that she's alive because there's not much good that can be done through that.
It's a fascinating history. I mean, you go back to the Egyptian pyramids or the rich people's mausoleums in the cemetery and all the rest. In your book, you go to Indonesia and Mexico and Spain and Japan and Bolivia and all over the place. And you write about your own experiences there in California. And it's a terrific read yet again. It's called From Here to Eternity, Traveling the World to Find the Good Death. This is mortician Caitlin Doty. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.